Hello, and welcome to TJ Frog Chats With. I'm Tanya, aka TJ Frog, and live on the Isle of Skye off the northwest coast of Scotland, and I have a creative business in which I promote the heritage craft of Dorset buttons. My own life journey involves moving from the south coast of England to being immersed in the dramatic Skye landscape, as well as changing from a public sector worker to being self-employed, running my own company, and exploring a lifelong love of creativity. I'm fortunate to meet amazing people on my travels who too have seen their life path evolve and created new ways of being. Wherever you may be in the world, welcome and thank you for joining me for the first in my standalone interview series, TJ Frog Chats with Rev Joe Royal. I'm delighted to kick off this new series of interviews, which will be interwoven with my TJ Frog podcast, where I chat about the weather, my creativity, Dorset Button business, as well as a Skye focus section. For this episode, I have a Skye showcase, Rev Joe Royal. I first chatted to Joe back in episode 17, and I'd recommend listening to that episode before embarking on this one, especially if you've not heard it already. Even if you have, it will be a great reminder of Jo's travels, work, creative projects, how she came to be on Skye, and her future plans. In our chat, we find out about her exploration of spirituality, which she was about to embark on, as highlighted in episode 17. We hear where the training led her with faith, ceremony, therapy, and personal growth, and how her creativity today has evolved to creative writing and creating ceremony. A little warning, you might want to have some tissues ready. We did get a little emotional at one point and stopped recording and had a hug. Jo exudes strength, compassion, and deep love in describing what she calls her beautiful work. I hope you'll enjoy this chat as I reconnected with Jo, a creative soul. Welcome, Jo, to the podcast. It was nearly 6 years ago when we last spoke, September 2018. And we did actually say on that chat that one day we might get back together again and review where you were at. I don't think either of us could have foreseen quite how your journey would evolve.
Or life in that time.
True. Yes, a couple of years has happened, the whole pandemic. Last time you were in the bus, or just about to leave the bus, and we chatted a lot about your journey that you had been doing with your family on the bus, and your arrival on Skye, and how you'd met people through some of your creativity on Skye, and how you were doing your meditation, got dreams of doing retreats one day, you had just done an art exhibition. So many different things were happening. But one of the key things was you were just about to go and train to be an interfaith minister. And how about we use that as our starting point for our chat today?
Yeah, great. Well, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me back on and see where the conversation goes today. A bit like where life's gone in the last 6 years. So, I was just about to train to be an interfaith minister. Yeah, September, and I started my training in the October, and we moved out of the bus and into the house in October as well. The house was still in. Yeah, and at the time I wasn't sure what it was going to lead me to or why I was doing it, but just knew that there was a calling to train as an interfaith minister with the One Spirit Foundation, One Spirit Interfaith Foundation. And I think you've mentioned the art exhibition, and I think it was something to do with I'd done this year of an art course, and did I want to carry on and do another year of it? And what I realised was I wanted to put my focus back on my spiritual growth, my spiritual life, and that led me to look at different things and what I might do, and that led me to sign up to doing my interfaith training, but really it was about my spiritual journey and my spiritual growth. It wasn't to be a minister.
Right.
And it wasn't to do a particular type of work. So it was just about my exploration of spirituality.
Yes, yeah.
To put more emphasis on that part of my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you want to know about the journey?
Well, that started in October 2018.
Uh-huh.
But it was a couple of years course, am I right?
Yeah.
It was remembering?
A 2-year course. So it's just around my ordination anniversary, actually. So 2 years of training, and then I was ordained as an interfaith minister in July of 2020. So just as we went into COVID, which was a really interesting time because we had to take the whole course online, which we did, and we were actually ordained online.
I watched it.
Oh, you
I watched
did.
It all.
They created the most beautiful online ceremony, having not really done much online before. They had one online cohort that started the same time as us, but they'd obviously never done an ordination online before. So it was lovely that living on Sky, the ordination was supposed to be in Watford or something, I think. And I wouldn't have had people be able to make it because it's such a long way away. But because it was online, actually, I sent that link out to lots of friends and lots of people who've been part of my journey who were then able to watch it. And it was beautiful knowing they were there and supporting me.
And it was very intimate, really, watching online people in their own homes, either on their own or with their families who they were with during COVID. And I mean, I didn't know anything about the course. I was very new to what was actually being done as part of your group, but it was fascinating and a privilege to watch, really.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And the course was beautiful. We had retreat weekend, so I did the course in Northern Ireland, and actually most of the people on the course were from the Republic of Ireland. There was a couple from the Northern Ireland, and some from England and Scotland, and one from America. I don't think on my cohort, the Northern Ireland cohort, there was people from elsewhere in the world. But we went on these retreat weekends, which were really intense. And I'd come back and people would say, how was it? And I'd say it was beautiful and challenging and happy and incredibly sad and triggering. And it was everything. That's how I used to describe it. The weekends were everything. Like right from the off, it was interesting. We arrived near Newry in Northern Ireland, and it was a seminary for priests. And it was very Christian in everything about it. And also it was a place where they trained missionaries. So there was a lot of that was, it took a lot of getting used to. And could be quite triggering, actually, because a lot of people going into it didn't have a religion, so weren't Christian, or would describe themselves as something like Buddhist, pagan, Christian, or Taoist, Hindu, something. You know, it was like people had a real mix of faiths, or didn't have a faith and just had a spirituality. And so to be almost catapulted into this place that was about training priests and about training missionaries was quite an interesting location for the course. And there were priests still there. So half the building was used by the priests, and then we were in the other half of the building.
Yeah. What about travelling there, though? Was that a bit of a journey in itself?
Yeah. It was
Sky to Northern Ireland.
Always thought of it as a pilgrimage. And I think it's quite nice if you're going on retreat to go a distance.
Yes.
Because you get that sense of having this void space in which you can switch from normal life into the retreat. And then the same coming back as well. You've got that integration time before you then back in real life. Because I used to think I went so deep on the weekends I couldn't have then picked up with the family on the Sunday afternoon. Yes. There's no way. I needed that time to kind of process everything that had gone on and come back into life. So, yeah, I loved it. I flew from Inverness. So even like 2-hour journey to Inverness and then fly from Inverness. And then on the other side, it wasn't an easy journey. I think I had 2 buses and a taxi then to get to the retreat venue. But I would always arrive on Thursday and the retreat didn't start till lunchtime on the Friday. So I had that time to myself. It was beautiful. It was like time out of time.
Yeah.
And the grounds were really gorgeous. And to visit the grounds throughout the year was really beautiful. So at times, you know, the snowdrops were amazing. Other times the bluebells and there were swans on the lake. And just seeing it through the seasons was really gorgeous and really part of it. Because for me, what I discovered through it was if I have any faith path, it's an earth path.
Right.
And so I felt very connected to the earth. And yeah, a lot of my ceremony and things now will be in nature and very nature based. And also I found another, like it felt like a whole different religion. So we looked at part of the training, we looked at lots of different things, but one stream of the training was to look at different religions. And so we looked at 6 or 8 religions. And what I found was almost like their the vertical, if this makes sense, like they're the religion, and then cutting right across them on the horizontal was like this, the divine feminine and love and the path of the mystics, which are in each of the religions. So it felt like to me that was almost like a new religion. So it felt like the earth and nature were part of it, and then also the feminine and the divine feminine. I feel like it brought me to something new, to a new way of being in relationship with religion, with faith, with people, with planet, all of it, really. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You found your own faith path through exploring all the different religions and aspects on the course.
Yeah, I think so.
4 years on then, a lot has happened in that 4 years as well, hasn't it? In terms of where you've taken your own work from when you first finished the course to where you're at now.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I think so one of the things that happened during the course was I felt a calling to go and work at Women's Aid. So I think this connection with the divine feminine, the feminine, but also the course was more than just exploring faith paths. It was a deep delve into ceremony, into our own life and our life stories and our experiences, as well as things like spiritual counselling. There was a lot of kind of spiritual and personal growth in it. But one of the things it led me to was a job at Women's Aid. So I took a job as a support worker at Women's Aid. So that was just at the end of first year. So I did that all the way through the second year. And then that continued for another 3 years after I was ordained. And that felt really, felt like I found a way of being an activist in a way that worked for me. Because often I feel like activists are out, you know, marching. And I've not done a lot of that in life. But this was a way to, support women using the skills that I had.
Yes.
And also to try and make a difference with the patriarchy, I suppose. So that was quite a big part of the ministry, as we would call it, as ministers that came from the course and carried on afterwards. And then I carried on things that I was doing before. So I was teaching meditation and that's continued. And I was coaching, I think, when we last spoke.
Yes.
But it felt like my coaching had started off being very performance-based, but it was much more intuitive and spiritual than it had been by the time we were talking, because I did my coaching qualification back in 2009, And so it feels like I don't offer coaching now. I don't call it coaching, but I do offer spiritual counselling or accompaniment, as right. I would call it, which again uses all the same skills as, yeah. as a coach, you know, the listening, the questioning, the reflection, the holding space, all of that. But it also, it's kind of each conversation is a co-creation with divinity, whatever people would term that themselves. So we're inviting in to the conversations that we have that third entity
right.
of what, you know, somebody might call love
yeah.
or someone might call God or goddess or nature or great spirit or whatever. And then it feels like in those sessions I'm again holding space but using a lot of intuition and sometimes sharing practices, spiritual practices, or inviting people to ceremony. It always feels very much like everything's an invitation. And we go wherever, whatever the person wants from the conversation, the accompaniment, we go there. So it feels like such a privilege to do that work, to walk alongside people on their journey. Yes. And often people come when they've got health crisis or they're in grief or they've got some big transition. So maybe a separation, a child leaving home, becoming a mum, you know, all those kind of big transitions, getting married, then that accompaniment work feels really important to support people as they go on that journey. So yeah, I'm still teaching meditation. I think quite soon after I was ordained, I also realised I wanted a therapy mm-hmm. to help people clear things. So I'd always felt with my coaching that I could take people to a point, but often there was kind of ingrained behaviour in them that they couldn't get beyond.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was like some resistance to moving forward. And we could do a lot of the practical things, but then there was that limiting beliefs and behaviours. The therapy, I looked at lots of different clearing type therapies, but the one that came was Havening Technique. So I trained in that and was accredited in that at the solstice, I think, the uh-huh. same year that I was ordained. So that's another thing that I offer, often alongside my accompaniment, but to help people, what it does is help people de-link emotion from trauma.
Okay.
And I think it also came about as with my work at Women's Aid as well. I wanted to understand trauma more.
Yes,
and
yeah.
Yeah, so that's also in the mix, as well as retreats, which I think I talked to you about wanting yeah, to run.
Yeah, and now you are.
Yeah, so I had run some. I think I ran my first retreat back in 2015, but obviously I'd not run any on Sky, and then things got delayed with COVID, and yeah, I've started to run retreats here as well as that one-day course teaching meditation. So hosted one last autumn, and I've got another one in the diary for autumn this year.
And what happens on your retreats?
Lots of relaxing and resting in a beautiful setting here in the Highlands. So it's not actually on Sky, it's just over the bridge right. from Sky, but it looks on the Isle of Skye, and it's the venue I have is right on the shore of Loch Alsh.
Right.
And it's got this amazing sauna, which is right on the shore. So you can sit in the sauna and look out to Sky and look out at hopefully the wildlife whilst we're there. But they do get otters on the shore then. Sometimes they have whales, dolphins and, you know, eagles. So, yeah, it's... So as part of it, often I'll teach the meditation course that mm-hmm. I teach. But it depends who's coming. Because yes. if everybody's already learnt meditation with yes. me, then I'll do kind of a refresher session and use the time differently. But I always meet with everyone that books to find out what they're hoping for from the retreat so I can flex it.
Yes.
But the autumn retreat for me is about really kind of slowing down after the busy summer and settling into autumn and winter, like almost coming into that hibernation time.
Leaning into getting cozy and
Korean for the winter.
So I
collaborate with other people on it, so not just the venue, but I have Fiona come and do a sound bath, Rona come and do some yin yoga, so it's all about gentle, nourishing. Sarah come and do the food. So they're all local women, so it's always women that deliver on the retreats. I think it's important for a women's retreat that it's delivered by women. And we work together to make sure it's like it feels really safe and held and supportive and restful and nourishing.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I know the location that you're talking about, Jo, and it sounds like a very relaxing, beautiful time. And if I wasn't already booked up myself, I think I'd be booking on it.
Oh, it'd be lovely to have you. I can't wait. I'm excited for the people we have booked.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, bookings are still open. In fact, I've just, today the early bird was supposed to end and I've just extended it for another month. So it'll end on the 23rd of August, and then bookings will still be open for a month after that, but that's the time to grab the best deal. I can't wait. It's always lovely to meet the people that are going to come and to really design it for them. And so the one I ran last year, there was poetry woven throughout it and creativity and time in nature, so they all feel so important to our well-being. So I like to weave all of that into it. The dates are the 24th to the 27th of October. Which is just before, 24th to the 27th, just before Samhain, which is that time. It's the time when the clocks go back and that real starting to settle into the darkness and the winter, and to try and embrace the stillness. I mean, we live in quite a linear way, but the feminine way of embracing the seasons and to really rest in the winter feels so important to get back to, because we're just all likely to burn ourselves out if we don't. I'm aware that only works if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. I also have a spring retreat where it's much more about coming out from the winter. Yeah, I have different people deliver on that one. So we have forest bathing and we have art out in nature. So they're much more about coming out in the spring, you know, and embracing that new energy to really feel the energy that's coming up from the earth in the spring. But maybe if somebody wanted to come from Australia, South America, I could swap it round and we could run the spring one in our autumn and the autumn one in,
Food for thought. You mentioned creativity, and we talked before in our previous conversation how we met through knitting. I don't think you do so much knitting these days, do you?
No. I have a half-finished sock with the needles pulled out of it that I threw across the floor this winter.
Your creativity, again, partly through your interfaith ministry training, has gone off in a slightly different direction, hasn't it? But still very creative.
Yeah, so one of the things I didn't talk about when I said what I'm doing in my work now is I hold a lot of weddings, and lots of people come to the Isle of Skye to elope or to renew their vows or to have a marriage blessing if they're getting married legally somewhere else. And so a lot of my creativity is in writing these days. So I work with people over a period of months, usually before their ceremony, to understand their intentions for their ceremony and what they're hoping for from it, and then write personal ceremonies for them with sometimes with Scottish Celtic rituals in them, But yeah, a lot of personal wording. So that's where a lot of my creativity goes these days. I don't know if it's a limited supply that we have, but it feels like that takes a lot of my creativity. And other writing, so just writing for blogs and socials. And a book that I am currently writing about ceremony. So part of my journey on my One Spirit training was I had a very funny relationship with ceremony before I started it, and I knew that ceremony was a big part of the course. So I didn't know where it was going to take me, this whole idea of ceremony, and I found it very triggering at different points throughout the course, right from the off. But where I got to with it was I had thought that ceremony didn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. And I'd avoided ceremony, like I didn't want to go to my graduation. Just at various points that we'd eloped to New Zealand, so we didn't have to do the kind of traditional ceremony when we got married. And I discovered that it wasn't that ceremony doesn't do it for me. It's that some of the types of ceremony right. that I'd been part of before didn't do it for me. Also, that ceremony has the potential to do it to me, like do it for me, like to such an extent that I find it incredibly intense. Mm. So I discovered the power of ceremony, and I feel like there's some magic in ceremony, that it's got the potential to rewrite the future, the present, but also the past, to let go of things, to heal things, to heal previous generations stuff. Like I think it's really magical.
Right.
So ceremony got hold of me in a new way, and then I guess I've got hold of ceremony in a new way. So elopements and vow renewals, wedding blessings, marriage blessings are a big part of my life now. And also this book that I'm writing on ceremony, and it's really about helping people to access ceremony and ritual right. again, because we've really lost that in our society, and it brings a bit of the magic back into life, but it also helps us to process everything that's going on in our lives.
Yeah.
So not just ceremonies that are weddings and baby blessings and funerals, but ceremonies for all the events throughout our lives. So for example, my daughter leaves home in less than 2 months, and she and I have been holding ceremony at the new moon.
Oh, yes. Yes. Tell us more about that.
So 13 ceremonies over the year before she leaves home. And some of the ideas came from a baby blessing that I wrote on the course for my own self. Because we worked through our whole lives and wrote ceremonies, like what would you have had, or what would you have wanted to have, or what do you feel like you needed. So some came from that, some came from a rite of passage ceremony I wrote for myself. But it was thinking about what does she need as she leaves home. And it feels like she's got all the practical skills and she can look after herself. But it was really recognising her qualities. Mm-hmm. So part of the ceremony is I made her a medicine bag. There's a bit of creativity coming in.
Did you get the same machine out?
No, not really. It was pretty rough. But it's kind of the concept of it, I suppose. And in that bag, each month when we meet, goes something to remind her of one of her qualities that she has, wow. one of her resources. Wow. So recognising all the things that she already has and are part of her. So that when she takes that, when she takes that with her, she'll be reminded of those qualities. But there's lots of different elements to it. So another element is when she was 13, I asked a group of women to write her, actually 12, I asked a group of women to write her a letter, because I wanted to create this community of women for her. That if she turned out from family, or her parents had difficult relationships with her, that there was other women that she could go to, that she could talk to about things. And those letters that they wrote are still in a box that she has, and in those I asked them to recognize a quality in her, but also to share a piece of their own wisdom. And so part of this ceremony is she's been reading those letters at random, one at a time. And they're so valid now. Like, they're 6 years later and they're so resonant for this next journey she'll make. That journey was like, you're about to become a teenager next year. This is, you're about to leave home, but they're still so resonant. And the other part of it is a letting go. So we have had 13 red threads on our ankles, each of us, and each month we cut one off, which is that kind of recognition of we're releasing one another in this way, in this relationship, and she's stepping into this new life.
We might just have to stop recording here for a minute.
Have a little moment.
Oh, good grief. That's so emotional and so special.
Yeah, so this is the way that ceremony has become part of my life. Mm. So that where it feels like when there's something to process or something to acknowledge and recognise, ceremony is a way that helps me and my family do that. I actually think ceremony can help everybody process their emotions. Just thinking about the elopement couples I work with, there's quite a process when we work together. So it's not just show up and do a ceremony for them. There's a whole lead into that where I'm finding out about them and their relationship, inviting them to reflect on their relationship and also to vision it into the future. And sometimes there are rituals in their ceremonies that are helping them to heal and process things that have gone before or inviting in things in the future. So there's often a release ritual or a kind of standing at the threshold piece where they're really recognising that this is a threshold they're about to step over, and there's all this that's gone on in the past and there's all this potential for the future, and really taking time to be with that. And I've even done fertility rituals at the end of, like, as part of a ceremony, but towards the end of it, once somebody's married, where it feels like that it is important in their relationship. Mm. So really meeting them where they're at. And the whole wedding and elopement part of my life is very creative, not just writing the ceremonies, but working with local suppliers, like the florists and I was just thinking of a beautiful flower wand that was made for one of the ceremonies this year and how I wrote a story afterwards about it. So I've been doing these Once Upon a Time series of stories, and this was about a mischievous fairy.
I read it, yeah. I will put in the show notes a link to Jo's social media, but I read it. Oh, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, I've been putting my Once Upon a Time ones just on my blog recently. But it's a way of sharing some of the stories of the couple and also linking in with some of the other suppliers locally, obviously the photographers, the florists. There's all sorts of suppliers. My daughter actually makes handfasting cords. So she's Sky Handfasting Cords. And that's beautiful to handfast a couple. So to tie their hands, if you don't know the ritual, it's a physical tying of the hands, and it's where tying the knot comes from. And to do that with one of the cords that Annie's made and sent with love, it's really beautiful. Aww. I feel like I was in the middle of saying something. I've kind of gone off track. Anyway, so there's just a lot of creativity, and all the wedding suppliers here are connected. We all know each other, have lunch together, meet up for Christmas. You know, it's really nice. We can all refer each other and support each other. Yes. And, you know, there's people that bake cakes and people that make this and that and the other. So it's really nice.
With your daughter going off to university, is she leaving you a big supply of hand fastings?
I think she'll still carry on creating. There's still a kind of connection with Sky, even though she won't be here, because all the colours are all based on the Sky landscape. Ah. So the yellow is gorse and the white is marble and the There's kind of lichen and bluebell and everything that we would see in nature here, so that the cords really reflect the landscape. I've been trying to, or inviting her to create one for each of the Wheel of the Year ceremonies, right, thinking about what is blooming and what colours are in the landscape, yes, at that time. So maybe she'll do those for me before she goes, put them on her website, on her folksy site.
Oh, well, if any of you are thinking of an elopement, then Skye is definitely becoming, or has become, a very popular place for people to come and elope, hasn't it? And as you, yeah, said, proposals as well. And
Proposals and vow renewals as, yes, well, which I love to also do vow renewals, because couples then come, they have all that history of their relationship, mm, and, you know, maybe 30 years together, 20 years together, 10 years together. And there's lots and lots of beautiful content then to create a really unique ceremony.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons a lot of people come here is the landscape, the dramatic landscape that we have. How do you get to decide which location? Do some people know because they've seen it on the internet, or they've been to Skye before, or do they sometimes ask you for suggestions and then you, you know, come together on a, yeah, decision?
Both, all of that.
Okay.
Usually we work with a photographer as well, so, right, I always recommend people book local photographers,
yes,
because they will know where's the best place and the best time of day for the light and for the tourists, because it can be quite busy here, so you don't want to, yes, turn up at the fairy pools when it's going to be really busy and expect to have a quiet ceremony.
Yeah.
So lots of the people that book with me are quite introvert and quite quiet, and it might just be the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a wedding, then we have witnesses, but sometimes the photographer will be one, they might have a piper who is one. So some people, they know where they want to be, and then it's just us suggesting times when it might be quieter and when the light's good. Other people, they don't care, but they love mountains or they love the water, and so we might suggest. My current favourite location, I don't know if I should say it on a podcast.
I know, that was going to be one of my questions, and I thought, oh, is that a good idea or not?
it's a bit of that, you know, top 10 things to see on Skye, and then those places are always rammed. Yeah. So maybe I won't, maybe I'll keep it to myself, but get in touch if you want to know.
Is it north or south?
South. I like the south. I mean, the north is very dramatic, but there's lots and lots of places in the south that are also beautiful that nobody knows about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got to the point where, you know, August is so busy here that I've been thinking about working with a different set of suppliers, which are venue suppliers, but they're not venue as in hotels, they're more a beautiful private outdoor space.
Yes.
So yes, an oak wood and a wildflower croft, and just places where you could go and have a totally private ceremony, because obviously if you do it in nature, anyone can turn,
yes,
up,
yes,
but where you could have a totally private ceremony, but you'd have to book that location,
yes,
but yeah, maybe just for August at the moment, but yeah, that might become more popular if we get busier.
True. I think, am I right in saying that in Scotland, unlike in England, so places don't have to have a license, do they? So you can get married in your back garden if you, yeah, want to.
Yeah. Yeah. So currently, yeah, in England and Wales, you have to get married in a licensed venue. Mm. And as an interfaith minister, I couldn't do a legal ceremony for somebody in England or Wales.
Okay.
So I can do that in Scotland. So, right, I can sign the legal paperwork. So the legal system is very different here, right, in England and Wales. But yeah, you don't need to be married at a licensed venue. So you could get married on a hill.
Yeah.
You could get, you know, there are lots of beautiful places you can get married, which is a lot of why people travel here.
Yeah.
So, you know, this year I have weddings with couples from Canada, America, Australia, Germany, maybe Austria last year, Yeah, lots of different places in Europe, as well as people come up from England to be married here in Scotland, and people from all over Scotland too.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. It's beautiful work. It's really, really beautiful. Because although I won't have actually met them in person before their day quite often, we'll have met on Zoom a few times. And because of the work that we're doing, the accompaniment work, and I'm asking quite deep questions. Mm. And we feel like we know each other by the time we meet. And yeah, I just love the days of doing the ceremony. I go out, hold the ceremony, and then afterwards I'm floating around in this bubble of love. The days afterwards, quite often.
Feeding off all the other love that's around you.
And for me, again, you know, when I talked about the accompaniment and there being a third entity, it feels like that's true with ceremony as well. You know, we're calling in something. Mm. So again, depending on what people believe, but it might be God. It might not be. It might just be we're calling on the elements which we're in. And we might call the directions. We might call upon the mountains and the locks, the sky and the creatures, the eagles, that, you know, whatever feels resonant and true for the couple that I'm working with. But we're calling in something that is the presence of love. Mm. And so that's the love then that I float around in.
Oh, I can feel the joyfulness just coming out of you at me. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful work.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And what about, because I've seen sometimes you put pictures up when you've done some painting, and is that kind of like your bit of relaxation, your release?
A way of being with nature, I think, that is a still way of being with nature. So I can't think of the name of the company. It might be something like Mooncraft. I can give you a link that you could post. But I bought these really beautiful tree inks and rock paint, so they're all natural, and I've really been enjoying using those over the last year. I've just stocked up on some more because my supplies were getting a bit low, but they're beautiful. They're just tiny and in tiny tins, and I can just take them out with me. So I don't take much. I usually have a sketch pad, some water pens, and then these tree inks and rock paints. And like to paint landscape. That's my thing, to try and capture some of the light and the beauty of the landscapes here. But I'm not doing as much as I have been. I've got really out of balance. It feels like, because I've had so many weddings and I left Women's Aid just a year ago, it feels like the last year I've been in kind of startup mode. And I think I've got myself caught up in working too much, and I need to step back a little bit. So I'm just back from holiday, and I've committed to only working 4 days and having a play day. So that might be a day for some writing, and it might be some time in nature, some swimming in the sea probably. To get back, taking my art supplies out. Like, I've just been on holiday and didn't take them, and I often do.
Yeah.
But we went to a city which feels quite different. Like, when we've stayed on the Isle of Canna or Egg, you know, I would always take them to paint these landscapes. I think it's these landscapes that I love, where we live.
It's something I really want to get into, because every time we go away in the camper van, I pack my paints and my pencils and my sketch pad, and I never get them out. It's, as you say, that play day. I just having that time, making that time.
Yeah. And sometimes I think it just takes like, you're just saying, oh, well, I don't have to finish anything, but maybe just start it. Just do it. Well, we were talking before we started recording about that 20-minute egg timer. Yes. Just do something for 20 minutes. Yes. And usually with painting, at the end of it, I'll be, you know, enraptured, and I wouldn't want to stop after 20 minutes. Yeah. I'd carry on.
Yeah. Wow, so quite a journey. I was going to say a change, but it isn't, because you're still doing, you still have a lot of those threads. You've taken your personal learning, your development learning, your meditation, your coaching skills, that has still followed you through into what you're doing now. Because
those conversations that you're having with people who are eloping or who come to you for support or ceremony, it's still based in some of those fundamental skill sets, isn't it? Around, as you say, how you ask questions, how you show empathy, the reflection, all of that is still encompassed in your work. You're just perhaps using it in a different format.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like, you know, sometimes you get that sense of, this was where it was leading.
Yeah.
You know, when I started my interfaith journey, I was looking back and going, oh, I lived in quite a Jewish area in Manchester for a while, and I was just so intrigued by the synagogue and the Sabbath. And then when we travelled in Southeast Asia, you know, the Buddhist monks and the temples, and even, like, this is a strange one, but when I was picking up an Indian takeaway one night in a restaurant, I was given a copy of the Quran from a conversation that I had with the waiter in the restaurant. And I just feel like I've, like, had not just the skills that I've had through my life, but the experience, and then, you know, all of these. I came from a Church of England and Catholic family. They were both in my family. And so there's been all this, like, a coming together of so many different things, the skills, the careers that I've had. But it feels like this is my career for the rest of my life. I've never said that before.
Oh.
Because I've had, you know, my careers, I think this is maybe my sixth career in my life. And often I'll do jobs and not do them for more than 3 years. I'm, like, always wanting to change and wanting something new. But I can see that this will grow with me and I'll grow with it. And I can see that that I'll never retire, and that who wouldn't want to marry people and run retreats and accompany people through, you know, the most beautiful and difficult parts of life. It's such beautiful work. I can't see that I'll ever want it to end.
Oh, Joe. I'm lost for words, really, because Joe is so articulate. Yeah, I'm just lost for words. It's just really... Well, thank you so much for chatting to me and also for sharing so much. I mean, Jo's just sat there looking at me and she's got tears in her eyes, and it's that whole tears of joy.
I always have tears in my eyes. It's a bit of a trademark. You could ask when I do my training, my interfaith training. Oh, I don't know. I don't think they knew what to make of me. I cried so much. I used to come home ill. I'd cried so much every weekend.
Oh, but it's a good release, isn't it?
It's release, but it's also connection. That's what I realised. Not until my 30s, but I used to cry a lot as a child and cried, like, all through my life. And would always be asked that question, you know, what's the matter? What's wrong? Why are you sad? And I realised it's not sadness, it's connection. Mm. So when I speak my truth, it brings tears. When I hear other people speak their truth, it brings tears. When I feel deeply connected to somebody or something, that whatever's bigger, often brings tears. And actually it feels like it's an indicator now of truth and love. I always cry in ceremonies. Yeah, when I meet couples for the first time, I always meet them before I let them book. And I always say, I'm likely to cry. So if you want a celebrant that's not going to cry, it's not me. Find someone else. Yeah.
Well, you say this is it's your job for life. It would be interesting if we met up in another 6 years' time and see how it's going and see how things evolve on Sky as well, because it has changed in the time that we've both been here.
Yeah.
And
6 years. I wonder what's going to happen in the next 6 years. Mm. Build a house, hopefully. That's in the next piece of creativity. So... Yeah, my husband's just finished a master's in green building.
Right.
Which has kind of delayed our building house plans for a while. But we're on it. We're designing at the moment. And then we'll build. And possibly in straw. We talked about hempcrete, but I think we're back on straw at the moment, straw bale. So, yeah, that's going to be a creative project in itself.
Wow, that's going to be a big project.
He wants to build with straw, to have an earthen floor, to have a rammed earth wall, so it'll be very earthy. He has built a couple before, and I've spent time in them, and it feels like, I always say this as one on Sky, he built Sky's first straw bale house, but it feels like being hugged by the earth, like the earth's grown up around you and is holding you.
Wow.
So that's what I'm looking forward to in our house. It'll be nice to be held by the earth in that way.
Wow, maybe that's where we'll do our next interview in 6 years' time.
Let's hope. With our feet on the earthen floor. Oh, that would be lovely.
Oh, thank you so much, Jo. I really can't thank you enough. It's been a privilege to chat to you again. Thank you. Thank you for sharing so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely and a privilege to do.
Jo describes her work as beautiful, and I have to say that I'm going to pinch that word because it was beautiful to chat to her again. Such strength, compassion, love, joy, thoughtfulness, insight. All of these exude from her and so much more. I could go on. And no, I don't know what Jo's current favourite wedding location is. I'll have to see if she'll tell me one day. If you are interested in finding out more about Jo's life and work, there's a link in the show notes to her website and social media. You'll be able to look at her blog on there and find out about some of the Once Upon a Time stories that she was talking about. There's all the details on there for Jo's retreats and events that she has. And I'd also recommend, if you are interested in what Jo's been chatting about today, signing up for the newsletter that she does, because that's called A Love Letter to You, and it's packed with information, lots about connecting with nature, and there might be a poem or, again, information about a ceremony. There's also a link on the website to Jo's daughter's folksy shop, The Sky and Fastening Cords, as well as to Mooncraft, where Jo sources her paints from. And on that note, I loved it when Jo talked about having her play day, because those of you who've listened to my podcast over time, I've talked about having creative play days. And I have to be honest, I've been a bit remiss in that of late. And it was interesting when Jo suggested about the 20 minutes egg timer or the Pomodoro time, as I've been using. Yeah, just 20 minutes. Get out that other little creative activity that you've not been doing and you've been meaning to. And you never know, you might actually get so engrossed in it that you want to spend longer. That's it then for this first TJ Frog Chats With. In the meantime, you can find the show notes on the website, tjfrog.co.uk. And if you would like to get in touch, either drop me a line at tanya@tjfrog.co.uk or via the contact page on the website. Or you'll find me on Facebook and Instagram as TJ Frog Sky. The music is by Ron Paynton and licensed from Melody Loops and called One Frog for a Prince. Bye for now. Till next time.